Welcome to the Aurora Grande City Council meeting and the meeting of the successor agency to the dissolved Aurora Grande Redevelopment Agency. Concurrent meeting. May we have a roll call, please?
Present. Yes. Mike.
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem, the Vice Chair, Ray.
Here.
Mayor Chair Hill.
Here. Thank you. Please join us in a moment of reflection. Thank you. Agenda review this evening. We have no closed session announcements. I'll move that all ordinances presented for introduction or adoption be read in title only, and all further readings be waived.
Excuse me.
Second.
Thank you.
Well, you're trying to move along, aren't you?
I've missed item four, which is the flag salute. I apologize for that. And to help us with the flag salute, Scott Ostrowski from the Rotary Club of Pismo Beach and Five Cities.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
So, Scott, if you'd come up and...
I could do that as well, because I'm kind of a virgin to this again. So, if everybody could either put your hand over your heart or render the proper salute and join in me, I pledge
allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Please be seated. And, Scott, if you'd tell us what's... the latest information from the Rotary Club.
Yeah, I think the last 48 hours we had one of our biggest fundraisers on Monday at the Slow Country Club. Raised about $40,000 for our foundation. And for those that participated or those contributed, we're truly thankful to help our scholarship program out. We come and have coming up also today at our meeting. We had our four-way essay test, and 12 students and their accompanied mothers and fathers and guardians and teachers and principals have joined us at our club meeting today. And then finally, July 21st is our summer sizzle, and tickets are on sale, so I look forward to seeing some of you there.
July 21st, summer sizzle.
Yes, sir.
Very good. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, all.
Okay, again, for agenda review, I think we've moved and seconded that ordinances presented for introduction or adoption be read in title only, and all further readings be waived.
What was the motion and second?
It was my motion, and I believe Councilmember Brown's second.
It doesn't matter.
There's too many, Tim.
Yeah, you can second it.
Did I?
Okay. You don't want to get Jessica off.
Okay.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? That passes unanimously.
Your Honor, if I may, before you move on, we have an additional item for agenda review that I'd like to alert you to. This afternoon at 1:05, the city received a cease and desist letter from a law firm representing Elite Care. And it's in connection with Elite Care's efforts to get a state license from the California Bureau of Cannabis Control. The letter demands a response by the city by 12 p.m. on May 10th, which is in 2 days. So under the Brown Act, there is a procedure by which you can add that to tonight's agenda as long as the finding can be made that it came came to our attention after the posting of the agenda, which it did, and that it requires immediate action, which we believe it does, in order to respond by the May 10th deadline. Brown Act Section 54954.2B would allow us to add this to the agenda this evening if two-thirds, or what's four, council members vote to do so. We would be recommending to add it to our closed session agenda pursuant to Section 54956.9D2, which allows for a conference with legal counsel whenever litigation is threatened, which is threatened in the cease and desist letter. So if one of you would like to make a motion to add that to the agenda tonight, If four of you concur and vote to do that, we can have it on our closed session this evening. We would thought it would be the first item under closed session if you took that action.
So moved.
Second. So I heard Councilmember Brown make the motion.
I think Kristen seconded it.
It's okay. That's not.
Okay. Can we do that on the voice vote?
I think a roll call would be better since we need to ensure the 4/5.
Very good. May we have a roll call
two-thirds.
Then?
Okay. Council Board Member Brown.
Yes.
Council Board Member Barnett.
Yes.
Council Board Member Harmon.
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Vice Chair Ray.
Yes.
Mayor Chair Hill.
Yes. So we'll add that to our closed session agenda. This evening, we also have an honorary proclamation declaring May 6th to 12th as Public Service Recognition Week. So if Lisa Christensen would come up to the podium. Lisa and Debbie and a number of our public service members are here today. This is an honorary proclamation declaring May 6th to 12th as Public Service Recognition Week. Whereas Americans are served every single day by public servants at the city, county, state, and federal levels, these unsung heroes do the work that keeps our nation working. And whereas public employees take not only jobs but oaths, whereas many public servants, including police officers, firefighters, public works personnel, building inspectors, border patrol officers, military personnel, healthcare professionals, and others risk their lives each day in service to the people of the United States and around the world. Whereas public servants include administrators, managers, clerical personnel, planners, engineers, information technology and recreation professionals, child care providers, laborers, social workers, and countless other occupations. Day in and day out, they provide the diverse services demanded by the American people of their government with efficiency and integrity. Whereas without these public servants at every level, continuity would be impossible in a democracy that regularly changes its leaders and elected officials. Now therefore be it resolved that I, Jim Hill, Mayor of the City of Rio Grande, on behalf of the entire City Council, do hereby declare May 6th to 12th, 2018 as Public Service Recognition Week in the City of Rio Grande, and I encourage all citizens to recognize the accomplishments and contributions of government employees at all levels. And it says unsung, but I do my best to thank you all and make sure that everyone knows what a great job you guys do. So thank you very much.
Members, this is the first time the City of Arroyo Grande has participated in the Public Service Recognition Week. During this week-long celebration, it's important to honor public employees and tell them their dedication and service are noticed and appreciated. Here are some of the lesser-known facts about the employees that provide service to the citizens of Arroyo Grande. Most employees are engaged in some type of continuing education or certification. We have a certified arborist, several employees with water distribution and water treatment certifications, professional engineers, several notaries, professional planners. All employees in the Children in Motion and preschool have early childhood education credits, and our child care is licensed by the state. Police and fire personnel go through rigorous training programs and obtain additional certifications during their career. Numerous employees volunteer their time during the year at functions like the Halloween Carnival, the Easter Egg Hunt, the Spring Tea Party, and We Heart AG. We're holding a citywide potluck tomorrow in celebration of our contributions to the city. Thank you.
If I could really quickly, I just wanted to add that one of the best parts of my job is being the Director of Human Resources. in combination with the Director of Finance. And it's a part that I love to be able to celebrate the employees of this organization. And by far, I believe with all my heart, we have the best employees in this city. Thank you.
We're here.
I second that.
I'm very proud of all of our employees of the city, and thank you for the great job you do. And it is noted that many of our city employees volunteered their time for many of our city events, and we sincerely appreciate that. So our city employees are volunteers along with all of our other volunteers, and we very much appreciate that involvement. Moving on to community comments and suggestions, this is an opportunity for anyone to address any item that is not on the agenda this evening. That would include the City Council as well as the Oversight Board to the Dissolved Redevelopment Agency. So if anyone would like to comment on items that are not on the agenda this evening, this is an opportunity to do that. Linda?
Thank you, Mayor, City Council persons, staff. I'd like to offer an invocation. My name is Linda Osti. God of the universe, we give you thanks for giving us another day. We give you thanks for your faithfulness to our city and to our country. There have been many struggles, many sorrows, and yet we are still here and able to give you thanks. May your work tonight benefit our city and our citizens. We ask that you keep our elected officials, our first responders, our armed forces, and their families and away from harm's way. Pray for them. May all that is done this day be in your greater honor and glory. Amen. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Would anyone else like to comment to the council at this time?
Thank you, Mayor Hill. Good evening, Mayor Hill and Council. My name is Daryl Sheck, representative for SEIU Local 620. I'm here tonight to request that prior to any layoffs to our represented employees being considered, that the council look at alternatives with regards to balancing the city budget. The city has potentially proposed a type of voluntary severance package for city employees. And I just ask that the city consider variations of that voluntary program that can be designed to make it more palatable for members of our unit to consider that early retirement incentive, potentially by extending the deadlines for such programs and potentially with extension of medical benefits. It's important for such a program to actually succeed that it's designed correctly so that employees will actually utilize it and save the city money in the long run. We understand that it's a challenging time for city finances, and we appreciate you taking our members' interest to heart with regards to designing a budget that maintains city services as much as possible while being cognizant of the financial challenges that you face. And I just want to say thank you for the good work that you do, and thank you for your consideration, and appreciate all you do. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
First, I'd just like to say that I appreciate the city government and what they do and all the processes that we do go through to in order to get some things accomplished within the city. Tonight, I would like to say on May 1st, 2018, the city planning director presented a resolution to consider to the Planning Commission, a resolution in two parts, to delay the construction of a traffic signal at the intersection of Fair Oaks and Traffic Way, to allow on-site housing construction of approximately 52 homes on 52 Saturdays, sorry. Also discussed to allow the construction of model homes prior to the recording of the subdivision tract map that would make the lots legal to sell. The commission moved to adopt the resolution by 3-2. On October 4, 2016, the Planning Commission moved to adopt the resolution recommending City Council to approve the East Cherry Avenue specific plan and the vesting tentative map, number one, with modifications. Number one, require road improvements prior to the issuance of building permits, require traffic signal installation and road improvements prior to issuance of building permits. The motion passed 3-2. To note, the same commissioners in favor of no issuance of building permits prior to the recording of the track map are now recommending allowance to permit construction home models. to address the neighborhood concerns, it should be mentioned that the only reliance we have is the specific plan as adopted by the City Council in February 2017. On May 7th, 2018, I met with 15 of 20 households on East Cherry Avenue, and we discussed the following: the postponement of the installation of the traffic signal. We agreed this is not an issue. This is an issue between the city and the developer. It is suggested that a construction zone be posted on and before the traffic way, street exit on Highway 101 and to slow down off-ramp traffic installation of a stop sign. Number two, consideration allowing construction of 52 Saturdays to advance completion of the subdivision development. We agreed. We live with the movement of 1,000 vehicles passing through our neighborhood each day. Though early mornings on Saturday and Sunday, traffic is at a minimum, providing a relief from the weekday traffic. With the addition of the construction of building structures along East Cherry Avenue will raise the noise level beyond comfort that we experience on weekends, which for most is our day of rest. It's suggested that home structure framing construction not be allowed on Saturdays along East Cherry Avenue and the north side of B Street. However, to compromise, Saturday construction is acceptable south of B Street and certain interior building trades be allowed on East Cherry Avenue. Can I continue just for a minute?
Very briefly.
It's not too long. It is unclear whether the developer will be building the future homes in phases or will the lots be sold as individual owners and they will apply for building permits. It has been a year and 4 months since the City Council approved the specific plan and phasing of the tract development. We agreed the neighbors should not bear any responsibility or consequences due to delays or procrastination of the development process. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your thoughts.
I don't know, can I still talk since I've been added to closed session?
We should probably, by procedure, have that comment right before the closed session.
Okay.
I think we'll be getting there pretty quickly.
Okay.
Thank you. Is there any other comment for items that are not on the agenda this evening?
Shirley Gibson, Halcyon. I wanted to talk a little bit about the sanitation district meeting last week. During public comment, there was a negative discussion about a prior board member of that district. A person's no longer on the board. They're now just a member of the public, a private citizen. I'll call that person X. So there was a negative discussion about person X, and Director Hill added to the conversation that someone else had said about this person X that she had verbal flatulence. And he said that was an accurate description of her. Now, I come from Arroyo Grande. If someone said that about me, that's fighting words. So I did take issue with Director Hill and kind of gave him the chance to restate what he said. I said it was wrong for a district board director, someone that represents the city of Arroyo Grande and the sanitation district, to publicly criticize or ridicule a member of the public. And I still think that is wrong. His answer to me was that when person X was a director, that she didn't know how to comport herself during meetings. Well, what about your comportment, Director Hill? Irony, thy name is Hill. When you said that person X had verbal flatulence, it wasn't funny, it wasn't clever, it was mean and unkind, and the person wasn't even there to defend herself. It was a misuse of power. When someone that sits on the dais talks about a member of the public, that is just wrong. And I think that you know, if you talk to the California League of Cities, which I think Roy Grande is a member of, I don't think anywhere in there does their good governance suggestions say that you make fun of a member of the public. And lastly, it adds to the fuel of the contentious sanitation meetings, because there you are making fun of somebody that has a lot of issues and is allowed to have those issues. And whether someone is obnoxious or not is beside the point. They have a right to speak, and they have a right not to be made fun of. I think it would be in the best interest of the district if Mayor Hill could step away from the sanitation district, because I think you're adding to the problems. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your comment. Would anyone else like to address the council?
Patty Welsh, Arroyo Grande, and I agree 100% with the last speaker. Thank you.
Thank you. Would anyone else like to address the council on items that are not on the agenda this evening?
I'm not going to argue the point. Oh, Patricia Price, Arroyo Grande. I really hope that Mayor Hill doesn't step down from the South Sound District, because really he's the only person that comes to the meetings prepared and calls out the things that need to be called out and dealt with. He's a minority on the board, and he has a lot of, it's very hard for him to get anything on the agenda. So, and I've said this before, I just wanted to say I think Mayor Hill is a valuable, wonderful member of that board, and he's a wonderful mayor, and I appreciate you.
Thank you very much. Would anyone else like to address the council on items that are not on the agenda this evening? Okay, hearing none at this time, we'll move on. Item 8 is the city manager and director's report. Mr. Bergman.
All right. Good evening, Jim Bergman, city manager. Talk a little bit to the council, just briefly, and to the citizens, but it's kind of inspired me to think about this idea of public service, and I am a very proud public servant, and it dawned on me the things that were missing in that resolution is it didn't talk about the people who come to these meetings and serve, and also something that I try to get out when I talk to people about government is all of you up there are public servants too, and you do that out of the spirit of your community, and I really appreciate that. In the news, I just read the newspaper, and it looks like our police department did a great job of arresting 3 visitors who came into town with some bad intentions, and then on Saturday we saw the Five Cities Fire Authority responded quickly to a vegetation fire over by the library, and that's another public service deed that we see out in the forefront. There's one other thing that I think exemplifies public service is for the last week, staff has been trying to make an effort of freeing up parking spaces at City Hall, so that people who come to visit the village can utilize these closer spaces. So they've been making the extra effort to park at the periphery of town, to utilize the back part of the LaPointe Street parking lot. And as usual, they're so successful that some people think we're closed. So they're not seeing cars out there. They think maybe we've taken a long weekend or we're goofing off or something, but I assure you, just because you don't see your cars there and the numbers of the public, that everyone is still inside working as hard as ever. And I've been talking with Bill Robeson, your public works director, and we're thinking about doing some better sign efforts so people will know that there's a lot of spaces that are available for general public parking, and we're still going to make sure that we have enough parking for any visitors who's coming to City Hall that they can quickly come into City Hall. So that was kind of my my pitch there. We're still in there working. We're not closed. Come on in and park close and then go spend some money in the village.
I have a question.
Yes.
I do have a question. I noticed, and thanks for pursuing the signage. We talked several months ago about directional signage to make sure people knew where the parking lots were. But there's one just right out here, and it says free parking. And I was wondering if this was brought to my attention by a citizen who was just, you know, like, great sign, but the free parking is really sharp on the edges, and it's kind of low. Like, maybe a six-foot tour might, you know, get a, yeah, or someone who does not have a hat on. So I was wondering if maybe they could look at that and maybe put the free parking, you know, on, I don't know, on top of the P instead of below the P, or just have it checked out.
Sure, well,
because it does look like a hazard.
Move it up if we have to.
Okay.
But thank you for that.
And thank you for the citizen who brought it to my attention.
Thank you very much. Moving on then to the consent agenda. This is for both the City Council and the successor agency to the dissolved Arroyo Grande Redevelopment Agency. Would anyone like to consider anything separately on the consent agenda?
No.
Is there any public comment on the consent agenda items? These are all the items numbered 9A through 9E. Which includes both the city items and the redevelopment agency, successor agency item. Any comment on any of those items numbered 9?
Mr. Mayor, I would move for approval of items 9A through 9E. Second.
It's been moved and seconded that we approve the consent agenda as presented. May we have a roll call, please?
Council Board Member Barnett.
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Vice Chair Ray.
Yes.
Council Board Member Harmon.
Yes.
Council Board Member Brown.
Yes.
Mayor Chair Hill.
Yes. Item 10 is public hearings, and I'll ask our Deputy City Clerk to please introduce item 10A.
Okay. Item 10A is consideration of Development Code Amendment 17-004. Amendments to Title 16 of the Arroyo Grande Municipal Code regarding exempt signs. Location, citywide. Applicant, City of Arroyo Grande.
Okay, and Mr. Bergman and Director McClish.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor and members of the council. Tonight's item is before you to ensure that we have enforceable and clear rules regarding temporary non-commercial signage. The proposed modifications before you this evening are very narrowly focused on these very non-commercial signs and do not include the entirety of the Chapter 1660 of our Municipal Code regarding signs. In fact, the focus is indeed on a currently unenforceable provision regarding political and religious signs that we will henceforth call temporary non-commercial signs. And to explain why we're doing this and what the proposal is Planning Manager Downing.
Thank you, Teresa. Mr. Mayor, members of the council, I will apologize to you up front. I try not to make my PowerPoints very text-heavy, but in this instance, they will be extremely text-heavy. So I apologize for that in forefront. A little bit of background about the city's rules and regulations regarding signage. We do have these rules in place in order to protect the character, quality of life, and the economic health of the city. And we've crafted these regulations over the years based on a number of different court cases. One of the most important ones is the Ledoux case, and more importantly and more recently, the 2015 Reed versus the Town of Gilbert case, which was a case that went all the way to the Supreme Court, and then a non-binding decision in the Baldwin Park case that I'll touch on a little bit later. So as Director McClish mentioned, we're bringing this forward to you tonight as a result of the Reed case, whereby for non-commercial speech, the Supreme Court came down and said you cannot provide preferential treatment for one type of non-commercial speech over another. Part of the issue in that case was the church was not allowed to have directional signage leading people to their congregation, where other non-commercial speeches were allowed to have directional signage. So in looking in our own code, one of the distinctions you cannot make is the
difference between temporary political or religious signage, which we have very well spelled out in our current code. That does make our current code unenforceable. You might have read a story in the Tribune recently that kind of highlighted this countywide. A number of jurisdictions are battling with this. We were waiting for the Reed case to come out and help us, help guide us. And it gave us some guidance in this instance, but not all the guidance. So what we're doing tonight is kind of three separate things. We're defining what non-commercial sign means. And at the same time, we're also allowing for the substitution of a non-commercial message where commercial messages have previously been approved. This isn't directly tied into the political and religious sign regulations, but given the non-commercial message component, it was important to bring that forward tonight as well. But the main crux of tonight is the modification of the specific regulations pertaining to the political and religious signs. So that's what we'll deal with in a large part. So first off, the definition of the non-commercial sign, for the record, would mean under the proposed ordinance, non-commercial signage means a sign or portion of a sign which displays non-commercial speech. So that would be commentary or advocacy on topics of public debate and concern. This definition shall be construed and interpreted in light of relevant court decisions, and non-commercial messages do not have a location factor such as on-site or off-site. This last distinction caused a little bit of confusion at the Planning Commission level, where they were saying, well, what would constitute an on-site non-commercial message? There really isn't one. Non-commercial messages being of public debate or something like that is different than Matt's coffee shop, whereby you're either talking about Matt's coffee shop that's on location or Matt's coffee shop that's, say, on the street. Both of those do have a location factor as their commercial speech, so hopefully I cleared that up this evening. The substitution clause, again, is not necessarily directly required to be added in, but we felt it was an appropriate time to bring that forward, given the context of the temporary non-commercial speech. So the substitution clause would allow commercial messages to be substituted for non-commercial messages. So if I have Matt's Coffee Shop and I have a sign and I wanted to replace Matt's Coffee Shop with Save the Whales, under the substitution clause, I would be allowed to do that. It's intended not to provide preferential treatment for commercial speech over non-commercial speech. So that was a concern that came out of that Reed case. If we're talking preferential treatment of non-commercial speech, providing preferential treatment between commercial and non-commercial is also something to consider. The one thing the substitution clause does not do it does not allow you to increase the total size of your signage allowed. So if I have a sign that's 50 square feet, I'm not allowed to put up 60 square feet. I'm only allowed to replace my message at maximum what I was originally approved for. It doesn't affect the requirement for a building permit or some other type of permit for the structure or mounting of the sign. So if I have to take my sign down and reinstall something else to display a non-commercial message, I still have to get a building permit for that. It does not allow for the change in the physical structure. So that kind of ties back to the previous point where I could either, if I have a rectangular can sign with an acrylic face, I can slide the face out. That doesn't affect the physical structure, but if I take the physical structure down and want to change it, I have to come back and get a permit for it. And it also does not allow you to change an off-site commercial message for an on-site commercial message. So if my sign says Matt's Coffee Shop, I can't say City Manager Bergman's Tacos when City Manager Bergman's Taco Stand is not on the same site. So it does have that protection in there as well, and that's called out in the ordinance in front of you this evening. Now for the crux of the matter, we're proposing to recategorize political and religious signage to temporary non-commercial signage. This is to allow year-round display of non-commercial speech. And we've crafted the proposed regulations for a number of different reasons. One, to try and remain consistent with the previous regulations that we had in place. Also to maintain the health and safety of the community, we don't necessarily want signs that in high wind are going to be blown over and into the street and potentially hitting pedestrians or cars, as well as the limit to visual blight. So that's been one thing that's, in my time with the city, has been reinforced numerous times, is the value for the aesthetic appearance of our community. So we're trying to limit just the widespread display of signs of all shapes and sizes throughout the year. In order to do that, what we're proposing this evening is year-round regulations, which would limit one sign per property, a sign no larger than 6 feet and no taller than 4 feet, and affixed to the ground or on the wall or in the window of a permitted structure. You'll notice on the wall is shaded a different color. I'll come back to that in a minute. Now, in light of this, we did spend some time looking at the original intent of our political signage regulations to allow for an increase in sign display addressing the election periods. And originally, we had proposed what's in the ordinance this evening when we say these 2 times per year are typically around election periods. Staff originally was proposing to have election periods, which were 60 days prior to an election, to allow an unlimited number of signs. What the Baldwin Park case that I mentioned previously said, again, it wasn't a binding or trial court or anything like that. It was just an opinion that was brought forward, was that even if you do not say that somebody can only display political signs during that time period, you are essentially giving preferential treatment to political speech over non-political speech by allowing only the unlimited number during that period. So it gets a little nuanced, and you kind of start thinking, okay, well, how do we address this? So staff's proposing that twice per year, for 60 days per occurrence, folks in the city can display an unlimited number of signs, and the maximum size would be up to 16 square feet. The maximum height of 4 square feet would remain. They'd still have to be affixed to the ground, on the wall, or in the window of a permitted structure, but you could go up in size. Part of the reasoning behind the unlimited number, we talked about maybe a cap at 15 per parcel, not 20 per parcel. The guidance we were given by the city attorney's office was the moment you say you can have 20, there's going to be somebody who says, but I have 21 causes that I want to support. You're limiting my ability to support all those causes and limiting my speech. So that's the reasoning for the unlimited number of signs during those 2 60-day occurrences. And I did want to show, now we have a great example of the size that we're talking about right next door. So the image on the left is what would be allowed year-round. Forgive the message, it's just we're looking purely at the size. So the image on the left in the lower, in the middle of that image, is the about 6 square feet of sign. So that could say, as it does now, re-elect Ann Dow. It could say, I promote whales, or, again, any temporary non-commercial speech. Then during the 2 periods per year where you're having increased number and increased size, we're looking at the image on the right-hand side of that screen, which is 16 square feet. So those are some visuals to kind of give you an idea of what we're talking about here. Now, the red text that I highlighted before is a result of the Planning Commission's review of this project. So they did review and recommended approval of the ordinance on the 17th of April. The Planning Commission did make 2 recommendations: that the message substitution clause be modified to say that the message substitution is only allowed in conformance with the originally approved sign design. So this specifically comes from the concern we have, you know, the rather strict sign design requirements in the village. We didn't want a sign that was previously in compliance with the sign, with the village design guidelines, to be removed, replaced with a non-commercial message that no longer meets the design criteria of the village. So the Planning Commission did specifically recommend adding that in. So that is in the resolution that's in front of the council this evening. And additionally, the Planning Commission added the ability to place the temporary non-commercial sign on the wall of a permitted structure. So going back a couple of slides, originally temporary non-commercial signs were proposed to only be affixed to the ground or in the window of a permitted structure.
for a couple of different reasons. We didn't want the permitted structure being, we couldn't say a permanent structure because what, once you get a permit for it, what then, does that become permanent? But we also didn't want folks putting up a quote-unquote structure just to be able to place a sign and kind of try and skirt the rules. But it was brought up by one of the planning commissioners that if I don't have a front-facing window on my residence and I also don't have room in my front yard for a sign, it makes sense that I should be able to put a sign on the wall of my structure or on the door of my structure. So that's the reasoning for that that modification as well. So I wanted to highlight that for you this evening. In terms of environmental review, we did review the project in accordance with CEQA, as we do. We determined that it's exempt per Section 15308 of the CEQA guidelines regarding actions by regulatory agencies for the protection of the environment. In this instance, we're talking about the visual environment. Regarding public notification, public hearing notice was published in the Tribune at City Hall and on the City's website. The agenda was posted in accordance with the government code. And we've yet to receive any comments written on this item. We did have one speaker at the Planning Commission from the South County Historical Society speak about something that was not directly related to this matter. So I'll highlight that. And we do anticipate, I included in your staff report this evening a kind of draft brochure trying to get the public to be educated on what the rules are moving forward. So we do plan to include a page on our website that has the regulations along with the updated brochure, as well as providing the flyer and candidate handbook that the city clerk's office hands out. So I wanted to highlight that for you this evening as well. Again, I apologize for all the text. I tried to throw in some pretty pictures as well. But at this time, it's recommended that the City Council introduce the proposed ordinance approving Development Code Amendment 17-004, which would amend portions of Title 16 of the Arroyo Grande Municipal Code regarding non-commercial signs. And I will be happy to answer any questions.
Okay, questions for staff. Councilmember Brown.
Man, that was a lot to follow. Just a couple points of clarification on that substitution sign issue for temporary signs. What's the time limit for that?
So there would be no time limit. It could be a permanent instance. And in discussions with David Hirsch at the city attorney's office, if a business wants to potentially impact their economic viability by removing their commercial speech for a non-commercial speech, it was his opinion that they have the right to do that under the
for as long as they want.
For as long as they want.
How does that meet the definition of temporary?
In this instance, it's not directly tied to the temporary piece. So this is something that we're bringing forward with the temporary sign ordinance, but it's not this piece. The substitution clause is not meant to be temporary.
That's what I missed. And then the other question I have: you talked about cases that weren't citable, or they were just regular cases. I'm trying to figure out why we're here. I don't quite understand why we're here, because it seems like a fairly substantial change. So I'm just trying to figure that out.
I'm sure Matt could do it, but I'll clarify some of my realm.
Thank you.
We're here because of the Reed case, which is a U.S. Supreme Court ruling, Reed versus Town of Gilbert. That is a binding precedent-setting case that we must abide by that said, virtually what it said is you can still treat commercial and non-commercial differently, but amongst non-commercial, you can no longer treat different types differently. So religious, political, directional, all non-commercial now has to be content neutral. So we have to treat them all the same, regardless of what they say. So that's why we're here. The case that Matt was referring to gets a little into the minutiae. It was a federal trial court decision, which is not binding on us, where someone after Gilbert had drafted a new ordinance to try and address the Supreme Court's ruling. And in it, they included, so they got rid of the references to the various types of signs. They used like a non-commercial sign distinction, which is what we're doing. But they left in the thing about relation to the election period, 60 days before the election period. And the court in that case said, no, you're now going back to content. You're tying to content. That's not binding on us, but it was. It tells us that you still could have problems referencing the election cycle. If you don't reference the election cycle, though, it's impossible to try and figure out how to say that you can have these additional signs for this limited duration. And that's where we came up with this 60-day period of your choice. But you'll see in the ordinance, we do say it's 60-day period of your choice. It typically would be seen around an election cycle. But we can't tie it to that or limit it to that because then we're into content again.
So with that example, would that mean someone that was, say, running for a local office could choose to actually put their signs out in a different 60-day period than others might otherwise do?
Absolutely. You get to pick two 60-day periods where you get the additional signage, and they can be any time of the year that you want.
Wow. Okay, thank you for that. That's all, Ms. Mayor.
Any other questions? Councilmember Barnage.
So can the 60-day periods be back-to-back, or do they have to, have days in between?
Theoretically, they could. There's no limitation in the ordinance proposed that would have a separation between those.
Okay. And then, so have we had, pretty much, I think once an election's over, everyone's so sick to death of it, they're like, oh, my God, the next day, let's get our signs down. But have we had issues, complaints, because if this is a complaint-based, that's what we're going to run it on. Have we had issues where someone had a big sign that said, save the whales, and left it up all year? Have we had any of that? I mean, I guess it doesn't matter because we're kind of forced to do this, but I'm just curious.
In recent history, I don't believe we've had any issues on non-commercial save the whale type signs, but I don't know if Teresa remembers any other instance.
Generally, enforcement, neighborhood services is concerned with signage, and we have a lot of activity around signage. It's just always an issue. It's why we want to come and make sure we have an enforceable ordinance for this. Honestly, folks are pretty good about picking up their signs after election periods. For example, once in a while we'll get one left and we'll have to contact them to make sure it's removed. Now, once we're alerted to the fact that a sign's been up for a long time, once that happens and it's a non-commercial temporary sign by our read, then we'll have to start the clock and so signs could be and very, very well maybe up longer. It just depends on complaints.
Okay, and then Matt, can you go? Yes, this slide right here. So commercial message may be substituted for a non-commercial message. So are you, and I think you gave an example, but I just want to make sure because this is sort of confusing. So you're saying that a coffee shop could take down their big, huge coffee shop sign, and they could put up, save the whales, and they could just leave that there forever, or that could be there for 60 days, and then they'd have to put the coffee shop sign back up.
Again, the substitution piece and the temporary non-commercial sections are separate issues.
Okay.
So in this case, if I'm substituting my commercial message for a non-commercial message, I can keep it there indefinitely.
Okay, and also as big as the commercial sign is?
Correct.
Okay. I think Barbara's head's spinning on this, so because I know if mine is. Okay, those are all my questions. Thank you for that.
Councilor Harmon, did you have a question?
Yeah, I did. That's more of a comment. So on page 3, there's, and this is of the staff report, so I don't think it's quite in the projected screen. But there's words that in the second paragraph, it says properties in a Rio Grande would be allowed to display, and then it goes into the particular one sign and 6 square feet and those requirements. But then in the next paragraph, it says the requirements for sign to be placed on private property with property owner permission remains unchanged for the current regulations. So could you please do some clarification on the distinction on why the verbiage is properties in a Rio Grande and what that actually means? And then how does that relate to private property with property owner permission? It almost sounds like we're kind of separating city properties from private property. So it's like, it's my private property. I can put whatever ever dadgum sign on that I want. So if you can kind of clarify why that is written the way it's written.
Certainly. So I apologize for that confusion in language there. So properties in a Rio Grande would mean all property within city limits.
Okay.
So that being all the properties we have jurisdiction over. The requirements for signs to be placed on private property with property owner permission remains unchanged is referring to the fact that the city doesn't allow signs to be placed on public property or within public right-of-way. So any sign that we're talking about has to be on private property, number one. And it has to be with property owner's permission. So I can't walk over to somebody else's private property, put my sign up, and say, well, that's my sign, I'm displaying it. So I do have to get their permission before I put my sign up. But these one sign per property, no larger than 6 square feet, would apply to all property, private or public, even though we don't allow it on public property year-round. So I see the confusion there. That's not the proposed regulations would still cover private property.
Okay, and then it would still, they could still have the 16 square feet because then that's going back to the temporary signage, and we've already reviewed all of that. So these 6 foot square, these are the ones that like that would advertise the landscape company that just put in new landscaping, or the painter who just painted a house, or a security alarm system. Sometimes you see those notifications. Is that what we're talking about on private property?
No, so we actually categorize those separately under our exempt sign section of our code.
Okay, so that's on the list that was in the attachment that has all that. Okay.
Correct, yeah.
All right. I'm good. Thank you.
Mayor Pro Tem?
Can you go to the one that says, the slide that says temporary and non-commercial? That one. So my question is, on the twice per year one, is that max size 16 square feet an aggregate number, or is that the largest sign and I can have 20 that are 16 square feet?
The second one, yes. So that would be per sign, size limit of 16 square feet.
Where did we get 16 square feet as the measure for what our max is? It seems a little arbitrary.
Great question. So it is the current regulation under our existing code. So we were trying to keep consistent with the previous intent of what our regulations were. It's also tied to the no taller than 4 feet, so it could be 4 foot by 4 foot square. But if the council decides to increase that number, decrease that number, that's up to you this evening.
Okay. And then what if I had a two-sided sign? Is that one sign or two?
That would be one sign.
Okay. And do we want to spell that out so that it's clear in the code, or is that...
We have a separate section in our sign code that talks about how to calculate the total number of signs that you have. Specifically, we get into the distance between the sign faces, and then if you have a V-shaped sign, the distance between the two outer edges. At this point, we believe that that's dealt with, but I'll defer to the council in your direction.
I do not recall that, and I don't know if that wasn't discussed in the staff report.
It was
anything,
not discussed
so.
In the staff report.
Okay. Well, maybe other people will have that question. And up a little higher on the right where you are, same slide, second bullet, no larger than 6 square feet. Again, where are these numbers coming from? Why, other than reference to prior code?
So the 6 square feet is what we typically see, again, on the sign on the left. This is the smaller sign on the left. Thank you. This was seen as, again, in order to address the visual blight issue, if every house on a street had a sign up that said save the whales or down with the whales or whatever. 6 square feet seemed a reasonable size to not impact the aesthetics of the neighborhood while still allowing folks to express themselves.
I've bought a few political signs in my day, and 2x3 is a pretty large sign. That's not the typical yard sign. So I would wonder then if we are relaxing this by saying we're going to allow unlimited numbers up to 6 square feet when the real intent might have been just the standard yard sign, which is 18 by 24.
Yeah, again, it wasn't the intent to relax the standards by any means. It was simply when we were discussing how to address this issue, 6 square feet seemed reasonable. 6 square feet is the 2 foot by 3 foot that you typically see on plans. So that was, in thinking, a building plan set 2 foot by 3 foot, that seems reasonable. But again, it's up to the discretion of the council.
Okay. Is there any issue with, you said, now this is going to the substitution one. Would there be any legal issue in... I appreciate the Planning Commission being careful to say that it should have the same design, the same look, meet the guidelines, or whatever. Is there any argument that, hey, you're making my ability to display my point of view, you're trying to regulate that by making me spend money on that?
No, I don't think so. The substitution clause is kind of this big catch-all that we've attached to the sign ordinance to cover the court's decisions that you can never give commercial signage more preference than non-commercial. So you just have this general substitution clause that says anywhere you have a commercial sign, that could always have a non-commercial message.
Oh, I see.
So if you already have a commercial sign up, you can swap it for a non-commercial message. But you can't if you change it at all or anything like that. Now it's a different story. Now
in the same way that if I changed my the ownership of Matt's coffee to Karen's coffee,
you don't
I
have
would
to
still
come
have
back
to,
in and get a new
but
permit
I would still have to apply
for a CUP. But and actually, if you're just changing the acrylic, would she even need a sign permit?
Well, I'm not thinking of the acrylics. I'm thinking about the ones downtown here with all the gold and all that stuff. That again, if I change Matt's coffee for Karen's coffee, then you know that's.
But that's a commercial message.
Okay.
The substitution clause says you can take away a commercial message and put up a non-commercial message.
And it still applies in the same way that if I changed a commercial for commercial, I would have to apply for the same regulation, the same...
You wouldn't need to apply for anything if you're substituting
I'm not saying that... Let me reuse the word apply. I don't mean apply as in a permit. I mean I have to apply the same rules for my commercial sign that I would have to apply if I changed for a commercial or a non-commercial.
Yes.
I see. Correct. Okay, that helps. Thank you very much. Okay, then the rest are comments.
Oh, I just have two more questions that came up. I'm so sorry.
Councilmember Bryant.
So the signs that we see around town, sometimes we buy houses for cash or cars for cash. So those would still be under commercial signs, correct? Okay. And then going through all this very detailed staff report and all the different, you know, timelines, I thought, well, if we're doing 60 days and 60 days, I kind of figured it might be, you know, a nightmare to try to track that. I mean, I don't think we're going to have this plethora of signs, but I thought, and I asked Matt yesterday, well, what would be the option of, we really don't have this issue out there, this problem I've seen of signs popping up all over town. What if we just didn't give the 60 days? So did staff look at that at all? Because I just worry about the staff. You've already put in the staff time with this incredible staff report and all this research, but I'm just worried about later on.
Absolutely, and we've talked about that in developing the proposed ordinance, in that should we even have these regulations? Should it be, pardon the phrase, but kind of a free-for-all? And we went back back and forth for a while and determined that our experience with the community over the years is that Rio Grande takes its aesthetics very seriously, and if we were to not have something in place to be able to fall back on it and say, okay, these are the rules that everybody has to comply with, even though we're not running into this issue now, it might be because of our current rules, and bringing this whole issue to light might cause folks to then go, oh, well, I'll just go and put up whatever message or whatever signs I want. And so we're trying to, again, be reasonable in terms of the balance of regulation versus ability to freely speak.
Okay. Thank you, Matt. That's it.
Council, Mayor Pro Tem Ray.
One more question. Here's my concern, my true concern. Is residential neighborhoods are going to have 4x4 signs during campaign season all over the place. I really do think that's going to be the result. Is there any way to limit the signage based on zoning so that the larger signs can go in commercial zones or multifamily but single-family zones or whatever, however we could word that? That's my true concern is what the neighborhoods are going to turn into.
But we already have that. That's already allowed.
But it is now, according to this.
No, but it's already allowed right now. You can have a 4x4 sign in your front yard, or in your backyard, or your side yard, or on your property.
That's
now
correct.
You can have 20 of them.
Under our current regulations, even though...
Or more.
If our current regulations were enforceable, you could still have an unlimited number of 16-square-foot signs in a residential neighborhood.
Right now.
Right now.
So my question is, can we... choose, if the council so chose, could we limit it by zone?
Absolutely. I would be concerned, and I would have to consult with the city attorney's office in terms of, does that then give preferential treatment to non-commercial speech in commercial districts versus residential districts?
All right. All right. I see it.
I have one. I apologize.
Thank you.
Thank
you.
Councilmember Brown.
What about, what's the phrase I'm looking for? Offensive speech. Or
good question.
You know, because I know some people that would love to let the world know what their views are on certain things. And
certainly. So I'll start in, Heather can jump in if I put my foot in my mouth, but... while you do have the freedom of speech, you have the right to say certain things, you do not have the right to put vulgar words and vulgar speech into the public realm where it's offensive to the general public. And that's typically for the protection of minors and those who are impressionable by that type of speech. And I am hoping that I didn't say anything incorrectly.
Well, you certainly can't put anything that could be a hate speech or could qualify as some kind of hate crime. We certainly don't want to put ourselves in the position of reading signs and determining whether we find it offensive or vulgar or not. That's the whole point of this, is to try and stay away from content. I suppose if there was something that was extremely vulgar and we were getting complaints about it, we could do the research to determine what the boundaries are there. I haven't done that research. I'm not sure what the boundaries are, but, you know, under People's First Amendment freedom of speech, I think we would be very hesitant to tell people what they couldn't put on their signs.
Oh, joy. Thank you.
I went by Matt's coffee shop the other day, and I noticed that you had the maximum amount of commercial signage that the ordinance permits. And my question is, so in the 60-day periods, can you put an unlimited number of non-commercial signs on Matt's coffee shop?
Under the proposed ordinance, yes.
Thank you. Is there public comment on this item?
I just have some questions, Patricia Price. I thought that it said one sign per property. I thought it said one sign per property. And then I'm hearing unlimited signs. You can put all you want on there. So that doesn't make sense to me. If that could be explained, I'd appreciate it. And that really is the main thing. I'll make a comment. It seems to me if somebody puts a bunch of 4x4 signs on property, if they're wanting to get something, that's a lot of people would consider that not in good taste. So it might be, you know, it might backfire on whoever does it.
Thank you. Matt, could you explain the question about one sign vice the multiple signs?
Certainly. So the year-round regulations would be one sign per property, and year-round regulation of 6 square feet in total. But then we get into the twice per year, 60 days per occurrence issue where you could have the unlimited number, and I believe that was going back to your comment of Matt's Coffee Shop then having an unlimited number of non-commercial signs. So twice per year you could run into that. And we did talk about kind of the self-policing aspect of it as well, where if I'm the property owner who is littering my front yard with signs year-round or even during those 60-day periods, I'm taking it to the extreme, it might be one of those things that the neighbors say, you know, your yard does not look great. And so the community might self-police itself. So that's something that we did discuss as well.
Okay. Is there any other comment on the item? We'll allow one more question.
I was wondering why 2 60-day periods? And I'm concerned that I'm going to have to look at the same signs for 120 days. And I can see why someone would want to get their signs out there. But just as a citizen, I get really tired of looking at especially political signs. I think 60 days is enough. And again, that might be, but I don't, in this case, name recognition, it might not backfire. So why 2 60-day periods? And I can see where it would be almost impossible to police, you know. But it just seems like 1 60-day period. Anyway, why?
Okay, thank you. Now, would you like to address that one?
Just, again, the whole purpose of this is to allow people one sign to express whatever views they have per year, per property. And where our old ordinance tied a 60-day period to the elections, now we say 2 60-day days whenever you want, because we can't favor political speech over other speech. So that's the whole reason. The crux is just keep it one sign per property, year-round, twice a year, and frankly, we typically will expect customarily to get more activity in the sign world around elections. We just can't tie you to that period.
And that's because there's typically maybe a primary election and a general election.
Correct, June and November.
But we're not focusing on elections. That's just
a passing
coincidence.
Biannually, right?
But it is confusing. And by all means, we intended to come in here and make a quick and easy fix, and it has a lot of nuances. But just so folks understand, that's the reason.
Thank you very much. Discussion, starting with Councilmember Barnage.
Thank you. So I'm generally in favor of moving forward with, I'll just make a couple of comments on some specifics. I think that our hands are kind of tied on most of it. I'm sort of confused which information our hands aren't tied, but I'll make some comments and then we'll see what anybody else says and we'll see if we're even allowed to change that. So I definitely understand the 2 60-day periods because that's typically what we've had in the past. They can do them any time of the year now. Makes sense. The max size, so can you go back to the slide, Matt, the max size, 16 square feet. So what worries me about that is what Mayor Pro Tem Ray brought up, that now, I mean, I don't think someone would do this, but you could have an issue where people put up too many huge signs, and it would just, you know, now we kind of live with those big signs, and we live with usually one or two of them unless it's a huge property. So I feel like that maybe has to be addressed. I'm not sure how. And then also just going back to the small sign that you had a photo of, though, I mean, we can go measure the one next door, but they're typically 18 by 24. They're not 2 by 3. So if we're just kind of talking about that sticking in the ground sign, they're not 2 by 3. So that's, I know maybe you can get them and you can order them online that size, but typically that's not how big they are. So perhaps we could, just because that's what we've always had, it's work, that's what people are using, we could stick with that smaller size if that's allowed, and that's not going to infringe on anyone's, you know, free speech. So those are my comments. Thank you. Oh, and just that I think that hopefully everyone just kind of does what they've been doing, and AG looks amazing, and I think everybody agrees that everybody keeps it looking nice, and we maybe won't have to use this, but on the off chance, at least it's in the books and we have it, because you have gone to an immense amount of work to try to make sure it's enforceable. Thank you.
Mayor Pro Tem.
Nothing's ever easy, is it, Teresa? So I think in the end, I just hope that this is much ado about nothing, and that people continue the habits and the traditions of elections going forward. There's always an outlier. And I think over time will be the erosion of it. So that's my concern, but we don't have to legislate for that right now. But I would like, I think, to see that 6 feet change to 3 feet, because that matches what most people do, which is the 18 by 24. And I did slip the mayor a note to tell him I was going to look in my phone and find out what the typical size was, and I did verify that that's the typical yard sign size. So I think that that's kind of what people expect to be doing anyway. So I think I'd like to change that piece, but the rest of it I'm willing to give it a shot for the next round, and let's see how it goes before we try and overanalyze it.
Too late.
Yeah, right?
Councilmember Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. This whole thing is really frustrating because, again, the regulation is just crazy, but it's clearly a sign of the times. So I'm willing to move forward. I'm not happy about it, but it just seems like it's a big morass. But, yeah, those are my comments.
Councilman Brown.
Thank you. I have a couple of comments, but another question popped in my head related to, so let's say we go forward, and I'm assuming other jurisdictions are going to have to eventually get to this to be in compliance with the Supreme Court, State Supreme Court ruling. So what happens if other jurisdictions apply a more liberal approach? I don't see how more liberal that it could be than this one. But I'm thinking, because our elections also run countywide, is there any concern about a more liberal approach then conflicting with our approach, so that if another jurisdiction allowed, I don't know, larger signs or more signs, yet it's for the same election period, would that open us up to concerns related to, well, in city X, Y, and Z, my sign can be 8 by 8, but you're, you know, only allowing me, you know, 16 square feet. I was just curious if in the minutiae, if that had occurred. Like, is that something that we really need to, you know, I might be getting too down the rabbit hole on this one, but could that be a potential? I guess anything could be a potential. But
I don't see it causing any legal concerns.
Okay.
Because we're allowed to, within our jurisdictional
Except
boundaries, come up with our own rules as long
okay.
as they comply with the Constitution.
Okay.
It could create some practical difficulties, just because if you're running for an office, a countywide office, say,
you'd have to check with all the various right. jurisdictions to see what their rules are,
and
that could
that
be
anyway.
Complicated.
Yeah, they're already doing that.
And it would be nicer maybe if we all had the same, but we're a little bit ahead of the game, I think. If you read the article that was in the Tribune maybe 3 weeks ago, mm-hmm. The county was interviewed, and they said their ordinance is unenforceable right now. They're not enforcing it. They don't have anything ready to be adopted. Some of the others, too, cities, what they have on the books is unenforceable. So, but the reason we wanted to do something instead of just saying our ordinance is unenforceable is because as the election, you know, our municipal election comes up,
sure.
Our city clerk gets lots of questions, and it's you get kind of tired of saying, well, we have this ordinance, but it's unenforceable. So people are like, well, what can I do? What do I have to do then? What do I don't have to do? So we wanted to have some clear rules so that people, the city clerk, could provide them with those rules.
No, and I appreciate that. So then on to comments. You also had asked us for comments related to the brochure, the fabulous glossy brochure. Great work to for staff on that. But I did have, it's on page 16 of the staff report. It's actually section 3. It's under the public right-of-way section. It's a second little sentence under there, and currently it reads, business advertising slash promotional and non-commercial signs are not permitted within the public right-of-way, and since there is lots of requirements for permitted signs and not permitted and all of that, I was just making a recommendation to perhaps change that to commercial signs are prohibited within the public right-of-way. And just change that word to prohibited, just to take one less permit out of there. And then final comments. This is going to be a code enforcement nightmare. They already have their hands full, and someone mentioned that, you know, there's a lot of nuances to this. Anytime you, I don't know, people think that bringing things to court is a good resolution, and it gets, you know, closure for whatever the issue is, and oftentimes it results in very nuanced type of things that literally we're left with trying to interpret to make sure that we're following the letter of the law, even though it's all open to interpretation. So nice work to Mr. Hirsch and the city attorney's staff, and as well as staff in the Planning Commission. I feel we have no forward than to move forward with how the Planning Commission recommended and what the staff has proposed to us tonight for us to be in compliance. Thank you.
I want to echo the sentiment that staff and the Planning Commission has done a really good job on this. This is a very difficult topic and potentially contentious with lots of pitfalls, so thank you for addressing that. Straight up, I think I am prepared to support the staff recommendation. I think we may see this come back at some future time, but I would hope that the city of Arroyo Grande, being a city of good neighbors, will respect everyone's rights, and I think we take pride in our community and don't want to see it littered with signs. And so I trust our residents and my fellow Rio Grande citizens to maintain the character of the community that we're so proud of. So with that, I'm willing to support the staff recommendation.
You ready for a motion?
Yes, please.
I will move the City Council to introduce an ordinance amending Development Code Section 17-004, amendments to Title 16 of the Arroyo Grande Municipal Code regarding, did I say Title 16? Yes, I did. Regarding temporary non-commercial signs.
Second. It's been moved and seconded that we adopt the staff recommendation and the resolution associated with that. May we have a roll call, please?
Councilmember Harmon.
Yes.
Mayor Hill.
Yes.
Councilmember Brown.
Yes.
Councilmember Barnett.
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Ray.
Yes.
Okay, that item passes unanimously.
Item 11, we have no old business this evening. Item 12, we have no new business this evening. Brings us to council reports. I have attended a couple meetings of the South San Luis Obispo County Sanitation District since we last had council reports. There was a meeting of the South San Luis Obispo County Sanitation District Board that was held in San Luis Obispo for the purpose of interviewing candidates for the district administrator position. I did not attend that meeting because, as I advised our legal counsel on the Friday before the meeting was to be held, that it's illegal and a violation of the Brown Act to hold such a meeting. They did that anyway. The district attorney issued a letter informing them of the violation, and the district decided to repost that meeting and have a do-over. So we did have a second meeting where the candidates were interviewed. I'm pleased to say that there were some well-qualified individuals who were interested in the position, and we will be meeting again this Friday to further interview the top people that had applied for that position. There is still no audit for fiscal year 15-16. We've been promised that that will be delivered at the next board meeting. I hope that's the case.
When is the next board meeting? Excuse me.
This would be scheduled for a special meeting this Friday. The audit would be the next regular meeting, which is Wednesday, a week from tomorrow.
Okay, very good. Thank you.
And the meeting to interview candidates would be this Friday.
Okay, thank you.
And that would be a special meeting. It will be held within the boundary of the jurisdiction.
Very good.
The board did issue a letter unconditionally agreeing not to violate the Brown Act and not hold meetings outside the jurisdiction. They have yet to respond to the district attorney's letter. Another significant issue was our third quarter fiscal year budget adjustment presentation. Halfway through the fiscal year, our budget was approximately $500,000 over. And yet again,
As in spending too much,
yes, thank you. And at the third quarter budget review and adjustment request, another $500,000 over budget. And one of my fellow directors said that they didn't understand all these numbers on the page and what the funds were, but we needed to move forward. And both of those items passed 2-1 with myself dissenting. So the sanitation district continues to struggle with finances. Hopefully we will have an administrator that is hired in the near term that will be able to turn that around and get the finances
budgeted
properly.
Just a quick question. Did they give any explanation as to why it's basically $1 million, right, total?
Yes.
Why we're over by $1 million?
One item was a major clean out of one of the digesters, which is the part of the primary process treatment.
Right.
That was about $300,000 that had not been budgeted in the current year budget. There's probably up to date about $350,000 worth of legal fees for various investigations that were conducted, most of which were directed at staff members. but that would include the investigation that was conducted on my activities
right.
there. About $350,000 worth of legal billing and in-house and outside attorney's fees. So, tremendous amount of money being spent with really no result other than that money's gone.
Thank you for that.
So that's the South San Luis Obispo County Sanitation District. The Briscoe Halcyon Interchange Committee did meet. We pretty much reviewed what was discussed at the public hearing that was presented here for the PA and ED becoming a viable document. And I believe people have until May 12th, which is this coming Saturday, to submit comments on thoughts about the Briscoe interchange. So please become aware of what the options are for the Briscoe interchange, and please provide written comments if you're so inclined. That there's a spot on the city's website where you can also submit comments by email or in writing on your preference for the Briscoe interchange. The last time the oversight board to the successor agency to the dissolved Arroyo Grande Redevelopment Agency met, we approved the refinancing. I don't know if it's been long enough since we've given reports. I don't know if I mentioned that previously or not, but the refinancing that was approved by this council, acting as the successor agency of the oversight board, also approved that.
Okay.
And that concludes my report. Mayor Pro Tem.
CJPIA has not met. EVC, since our last report, has met twice. And on the March 28th one, the Assemblyman Jordan Cunningham was there. It was very general. And the next one was not the next meeting, but the next speakers had everything to do with the strategic planning of the EVC's efforts to get the economic development strategy process underway. And that was the one that... No, take it back. Okay, and then the next one, which I did not attend, the last one, was essentially the same agenda item, which is the strategic plan. And what I am finding with EVC at this point is that the focus is so much on that strategic plan and what the business community is going to do in order to participate in that and fundraise for that, that really is not germane to the city of Arroyo Grande, and especially since we have chosen at this point not to participate in that plan. So it's getting to the point now where, I mean, I will still continue to go. We are paying members of the EVC at this point, but there's very little that has anything to do with Arroyo Grande at this point. Sorry, let me go back to my agenda. The Tourism Marketing Committee has met. There was election of new officers and a little bit of reshuffling of duties there, and a subcommittee was formed to review the RFPs for the new marketing company. And then there was discussion about making, which this council has done, making that group subject to the Brown Act. So that's a little bit of old news. They meet again next week. So I have not yet seen the agenda. I look forward to hearing what the RFPs looked like. They were expecting a fair amount of them in the double digits, potentially. I don't know what came in, but I look forward to reporting to y'all on that next time I see you. Oh, and I'm sorry, one last thing on that one. One of the things I was tasked to bring forward to the TBID is the, or the Tourism Marketing Committee, excuse me, is Councilmember Barnage's concern about the over-advertising for the Harvest Festival. And because it was not an agendized item, I simply brought it up, and it is going to be on the next agenda item, and she's being invited to that meeting to be able to voice her concerns. That's my report. Thank you.
Anything from CAPSO?
Oh, sorry. no, nothing germane to the city of Aurora Gray.
Okay. Councilmember Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Regarding SLOCOG, I think the two major things is Rhonda Carley is retiring later in the year.
That's an institution.
That's an institution, big time. I'm a little nervous about the transitioning. Even if we have good people, it's going to be tough. And their struggles still continue to be whether SB1 fails or continues after the next election, because it's going to change the outlook of a lot of things that we do. So that's SLOCOG. RTA, I had a really fun event. I was invited and went up to Paso Robles to the new bus yard. And the reason I went is one of our local South County Transit employees was getting an award for 13 years without an accident or injury, which is quite an accomplishment. So I was up there to present that to him and also just show support to the members of the Regional Transit Authority in Paso Robles, because I think we need to do a lot more, going back and forth between the different jurisdictions and not just be sitting in our own jurisdiction, because for instance, the Highway 4146 area where they're having all the problems, I think we should be considering putting money there, even though it doesn't directly affect Aurora Grande. When those budget decisions are made, that's a life and death problem up there. It's still getting worse, and so that's why I think we need to look at things regionally, which was the whole idea of these boards anyway. So it was good to go up there, had a great time, barbecued, just really good people to be around, and they were happy that somebody from South County came as well. Integrated Waste Management Board meets tomorrow. South County Transit, as you know, the big issue is the merge with RTA. That's going along. There's a few bumps in the roads in terms of how do you integrate people on the same contracts, and how do you pay for people that didn't have health insurance that now are going to be able to get it. So that's really that. I missed the Briscoe Interchange Subcommittee meeting because I was, in fact, in Paso Robles during that same time. And those are my reports, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. Councilmember Barnage.
My two boards have not met since our last report.
Yep. Holy cow, that was your shortest report ever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Community.
Yeah, there are a couple.
Council communication things.
Yeah. All right. So for the County Water Resources Advisory Committee, on May 2nd, the proposed San Luis Obispo Flood Control and Water Conservation District budget for fiscal year 2018-19 was reviewed. The budget included funding to support Sustainable Groundwater Management Act, the SGMA, which, it's referred to SGMA, efforts in each basin should additional technical work be required for completing the groundwater sustainability plans. This is important for us because it included for the Santa Maria Fringe Basin, $225,000 was projected should additional technical work be required to get the plan ready. Then, of course, any unused funds would be returned to the Flood Control District's reserve. At the Air Pollution Control Board meets later this month, but on April 30th, people may have read about this in the news, but the APCD Hearing Board, which is separate from the district board that I sit on, the hearing board approved the proposed stipulated abatement order after a full day of public comment. The order drafted by the district, the State Parks and Air Resources Board is similar to a court-appointed settlement. The order supports the district's goal, meaning the Air Pollution Control District, to alleviate the high particulate matter levels on the mesa. They agreed to order 74 additional acres to the 2018 mitigation plan. Fencing off the additional acres will begin this summer. The mitigation installed this spring will remain, and that consisted of 18 acres of new vegetation and 30 acres of sand fencing. All the 2018 fenced area acreage will be planted over the next few years. So there were, like I said, there was a full day of public comment. In the last couple of months, I received over 100 emails from folks supporting no additional closure of any acreage to the riding area. However, at the April 14th board, the hearing board members felt that the 18 acres was not sufficient to meet significant mitigation levels, which they want reduced by 50% by 2020. Then on to the Five Cities Fire Authority. At the April board meeting, the board received a treasurer report for the first quarter that provided an update on the authority's financial condition and reflected a fund balance at the end of 2017-18 to be nearly $95,000. The reason that this is significant is the fact that there was overall improvement to the fund balance because the chief implemented an algorithm for staffing that has resulted in lower overtime expenditures as well as spending down the fund balance. It was anticipated that we might have maybe a $25,000 to $35,000 fund balance, but now it looks like it'll be at least $95,000. Also, the concept of a memorandum of agreement proposed by the Community Service District was presented and reflects actions to be considered in the next 12 months and will likely lead to a JPA amendment. Components include Oceano's approval of the strategic plan budget adoption for 1 year. It would also trigger JPA amendment discussion and other potential dates for JPA reorganizations. This proposal, which is still under attorney review by all agency partners, will be formally presented at the upcoming board meeting scheduled May 18, 2018, with the intent to bring the MOA, providing that it receives board approval to bring it to the respective councils, that be you, for consideration and approval May 22nd. Also, on Friday, May 4th at 4:13 a.m., the fire authority was dispatched to a structure fire at 1630 Laguna Drive in Oceano. The home was vacant and appeared to be listed for sale. The fire was suppressed and is currently under investigation. Then on Saturday, the city manager briefly mentioned this in his report. On May 5th, there was a small vegetation fire. It was actually near Rodeo Drive and Mercedes Lane in Arroyo Grande. It was very fortunate that the wind cooperated. Heavy fuels required extensive mop-up. It's also noted at that time of this call, the Oceano Station was closed for the day due to lack of staffing. CAL FIRE was available to assist. And it's also noted that within a half an hour of the call, two off-duty staff responded to a callback and arrived with Engine 3 to support the suppression of the fire. I think that concludes all of my updates for the last two meetings. Thank you.
Okay, any questions? Okay. That brings us to council communications.
I have two. I have one.
Councilmember Brownage.
I just wanted to remind people that May 19th in this room, we're going to have another Teens Helping Seniors Tech Clinic from 10 to 11:30. It's free. If you email me at my city email or you message me on Facebook or there is a flyer out in front of City Hall with a phone number and email, it's nice to get a head count so we can have enough teens here. And then also I just wanted to, I didn't bring it up last time because we went till midnight, but the We Heart AG event that we put on with about 8 nonprofits, Lucy Amar School District and the City of Arroyo Grande was very successful. Our first one, thank you to Councilmember Harmon, City Manager Bergman, Matt Downing, Sheridan, Bill Robeson. I'm sure I'm missing a couple city employees. What?
Malico.
Yes, thank you. I feel like, who, Jim? Curtis was there. Maggie was there. So about 110, 115 people. This isn't everybody because some people went directly to their job sites. So hopefully if you didn't have a chance to join us this year, you can join us next year. We're going to do it once a year, probably on that Earth Day weekend, Sunday. And it was really fun. It was a beautiful day, and it was just a chance for people that want to help the community that don't have a ton of time to come out that one day. It was from 9 to 12 was the actual work day, and we got a ton of stuff accomplished. It's amazing what the group of 110 can do in the city of Arroyo Grande in 3 hours. It's pretty cool. So thank you to everyone that participated and also all the agencies that collaborated with us to help make that a success. Thanks, Kelly.
Okay. Any others?
Yeah, I wanted to review, also to add to the I Heart Arroyo Grande, I know that there was at least one off-duty firefighter engineer that was also part of the team, so I thought that was a pretty cool thing. I handed out a letter. It was actually a notification that the council received by the California League of Cities, and involves an upcoming vote by the CalPERS Board of Administration, Finance, and Administration Committee for consideration of a formal proposal for Assembly Bill 1912. And I wanted the council, although I don't know if you had any free time to really look at it, but there's concern here that this legislation becomes law, joint powers authorities in California would cease to be viable, a viable way for local governments and the state to collaboratively address service needs that cannot be achieved by each agency on its own. The League wants cities to participate in a, quote, full court press, close quote, on May 15th at the CalPERS Finance and Administrative Committee. And if we're not able to attend then, and I am not volunteering, thank you, that we could submit letters to reflect the vital role JPAs have in addressing our public needs and concerns about CalPERS contribution costs and unfunded liabilities that are having devastating effects on our municipalities. AB 1912 includes new unworkable requirements that would retroactively and prospectively apply joint and several liability for all retirement-related obligations to any current or former member of a JPA throughout its existence. The obligations are extensive and include active employee normal pension costs, retiree unfunded accrued liability, as well as both active and retiree health care and other post-employment retirement benefits. I had a brief discussion with Director Malicote related to her expertise on CalPERS. I was concerned not only of our current JPA with the fire authority, but I know that the SGMA process is also considering, I think San Luis Obispo is considering doing a joint powers of authority to manage their their Sustainability Act through the SGMA process. When I spoke to Director Malicote, she indicated that there are huge impacts for this bill to the California JPIA, which is a recognized agency that all the municipalities are involved with and helps, even though our insurance costs are still very large in sum. If we did not have Cal JPIA, it would be considerably a hardship even to, fund that. So a little bit of background there. There was a deadline to send letters by May 8th, but they also indicate we can email
So my long story short on my very long council communications would be any support by this council to direct the city manager to formulate a letter in opposition, and I see that Attorney Whittem is weighing in on this. So that's why I brought it up for not a detailed discussion, but just, you know, to see what we could do on this with such a short time limit.
Certainly. So recently, your body passed the new city council handbook, and our city clerk, knowing that this happens to us on occasion, and your honorable body approved a new provision to that policy that covers legislative communications at the request of city-affiliated organizations. And the intent of this had in mind that often the league will approach the city and ask the city to send letters, and oftentimes we have a timeliness issue. So under the City Council Handbook Policy 6.15, the preference is to bring these to the attention of the city manager and get them on an agenda so that the council can have a full discussion about it and provide direction to staff on whether they want to send a letter or not. However, the policy does say when a request is received necessitating a more timely response and we don't have time to get it on agenda before our next regular scheduled meeting, that as long as it is consistent with the position taken by the league and or other city-affiliated organizations and isn't contrary to any position that the city has previously taken, that the mayor may go ahead and sign such a letter on the council's behalf. So we have that policy in place, and I think that is what we would go ahead and do unless we heard some objection for following our city policy at this time.
We received it in our in-baskets on May 7th, which was Monday, so it could not be agendized. And also, it clearly states that the California League of Cities opposes this bill. So that would cover our policy as well. So I would like to see a letter go out. We agreed to be more aggressive related to CalPERS issues. This is one opportunity. So
we don't need to vote, though, right? Because we don't have an agendized item. We just kind of have to give general direction.
Right. You don't need to vote. And, in fact, when this could happen even without having this discussion, had it come in after, and the procedure is that the city manager reports back to you all to let you know that a letter's been sent. So I think he could just report tonight that he'll be sending such a letter if that's his.
That's my intention. I will write a letter and I will coordinate with the mayor to have him sign it, and we'll report back to you.
And we need to find out who AB 1912 Rodriguez, where is Rodriguez and how do we support his opponent? Because who the heck would bring that forward on behalf of a city or a jurisdiction? That's crazy.
Just to say that if there's any legwork that's needed to assist the mayor or the city manager in getting the letter, then I would be available to help out because of the short notice. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
The only other comment that I have is I want to recognize the passing of a longtime city resident and activist, Otis Page, who passed away recently. And Otis was very concerned about the Rio Grande community. And our thoughts and prayers are with his family. With that, community comments and suggestions, if anyone would like to comment before we go to closed session. This will be general comment for those items not on the agenda. And next item up would be a closed session. So any closing general comment? Okay, hearing none, we do have a closed... We do have a closed session this evening. Actually, there'll be three items because we had amended our agenda, and I'll ask the city attorney to first introduce the three closed session items, and then we'll have public comment on the closed session.
That's correct. Earlier this evening, we added an item to the agenda, and that item is a conference with legal counsel to discuss, pursuant to Government Code Section 54956.9D2, to discuss a cease and desist letter that was received by the city from Elite Care threatening litigation in connection with their efforts to obtain a state license for the California Bureau from the California Bureau of Cannabis Control. The second item is the public employee performance evaluation of the city manager, and the third item is the public employee performance evaluation of the city attorney.
Thank you very much. Is there public comment on any of these items?
So, sorry. As you know, Cynthia is usually the public speaker, but I didn't expect her to be here tonight. So I've jotted something down. I'm going to try to be concise as possible because I know I have 3 minutes. So I'm going to just kind of state the facts to let you know how we got to this position. Since January of this year, we've been meeting with Chief Pryor, Teresa McLeish, Jim Bergman, and Mayor Hill off and on regarding Elite Care operating in Arroyo Grande. We couldn't all get on the same page, so we contacted the BCC, Bureau of Cannabis Control, to provide clarification, but the city's still not agreeing with the Bureau and their chief counsel. So we've kind of come to a stalemate. Fast forward to this last Wednesday, May 2nd, I got a call from Chief Pryor because Teresa McLeish had been contacted by the CCC, or by the BCC, the Bureau. So we started making calls on our behalf. Cynthia and I both spoke to Mr. Bergman on separate occasions, with mine being the last. And Mr. Bergman said at this point we needed to present to council tonight, so we were planning on being here anyways. So I said we would be and asked him if he would wait to respond to the BCC until after we presented tonight, and he said yes. So neither Cynthia or myself, after we both convened and we talked about our conversations with him, we didn't feel comfortable with those conversations. As his conversation with Cynthia, he mentioned litigation, and with me, he said that we could present, but he didn't think we were going to get city support. So as our last resort, we contacted our attorney, got them caught up to speed, and she sent this letter hoping that we could all come to an agreement without having to go to litigation. And then, much to my surprise today, after I was told that we said we'd present, they'd wait to respond to the BCC, I got a call from the BCC saying that Mr. Bergman and Teresa McLeish had been talking to them off and on all day. So now we have yet another problem going on. So I don't know if Cynthia has anything to add. I was trying to be concise here, so.
Good evening, Honorable Council, Honorable Mayor. It is with great concern that we are at this position with all of you this evening, and I'm not quite sure how it happened, but I can honestly say that as discouraged as we are to have to even be in this position with all of you, as long and as hard as we all pulled together to make the right decision for the benefit of your constituency, because let's face it, we are not talking adult use, we're talking medical cannabis use. And to have discussions with the Arroyo Grande management team that we felt were transparent, clear, negotiated effectively, where everyone understood where we were at, because there's still a lot that is taking place with the state of California under these regulatory framework. I was just at the Capitol this last week. I'll be there again next week. This is not a regulatory framework that's concrete yet today, ladies and gentlemen. It's not. And the reason why it's not is because there's a lot of moving parts, and there's a lot of concerns about how it's supposed to be impacted on each of the cities. But the state gave you all basically a loose script and said, we don't really know what the framework is yet, but we're going to give you an opportunity to be good citizens and present a body of work and perhaps maybe even offer a licensing structure within your jurisdiction that's going to benefit the community. Some way, large or small. Can't even tell you what that's going to look like. We came in good faith as citizens of SLO County, hoping that we had found the right city that was going to allow us to do this type of work. And everything had been going extremely well. The regulations came out in, as we recall, they came out in November. And then in January 1st, there was a new level of regulations that we all had to abide by. Under that framework, there is still going to be another layer in which we're going to be able to provide feedback. Every single step of the way, we're business consultants first. We were looking at all perspectives. We considered all of your perspectives, government's perspectives, local municipalities' perspectives. If we brought this body of a business structure and model into your community, what was it going to look like? How was it going to act? How was the response going to be? And more importantly, what are all the safety perimeters? We had had open discussions with the chief. We'd had several discussions with Mr. Bergman. And I got to tell you, the last couple of months, the 300 illegal operators out there probably were getting more respect from the city than what we were getting. We were led to believe that not only is it's not going to happen in our town, it's not going to be in our town. Those are things that we had not heard from the body of government before this last layer. So, and the very last comment that Mr. Bergman made to me that, well, I guess, you know, you can always go litigation. It was just the last thing I ever expected to hear. So thank you for that, you know, for that direction. And I'm sorry to say that we had to, you know, we had to draw that card today. And I knew that we'd had to draw that card because what happened was we had an honorable conversation, which I thought, if someone says to me from this body of government, we will not respond and do anything until a certain time frame, we will give you an opportunity to go about the legal course. Here we are, taking the legal course. And then what we got was, nope, bets are all off the table. I changed my mind. Is that within your jurisdiction? I guess it is. But we have a law that we're looking at now, and we have an ordinance that we're involved with, and we'd all like to make sure that everything is being done to the best knowledge and the best experience and the best safe practices for everyone involved here. Very discouraged, and I just can't even speak. I don't even know what happened here, but something terribly is wrong with this picture, and people are being affected. And I'm talking about my business partner and ourselves. So we're very sorry that we have to be here, standing here today to present this, but it is, we were asked to do that by your management team, so.
Thank you for that. I have one question for staff that I don't think is a closed session item, and that is, have we issued any other permits for businesses? We had originally anticipated the potential for three. Has there been any other?
I'm not aware of any permits being issued. I do know that an application period was open, but I have not been told of any new permits. Okay. And there's our chief.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor, members of council. We have one permittee, which is Elite Care, and we have a second applicant that's probably three quarters of the way through the permitting process as we speak.
Okay. Thank you for
that.
For delivery.
Okay.
Delivery only.
Okay, with that, we will adjourn to closed session.